The following is an interview conducted by Hannon Russell with world chess champion Garry Kasparov. It took place on Thursday, July 10, 2003 in New York City.
We are here with Garry Kasparov, who is widely regarded as the strongest chess player ever to play the game. And Garry has been kind enough to do an interview with ChessCafe.com regarding the release of his new book, which is the first of three volumes. It is entitled Garry Kasparov on My Great Predecessors. Garry Kasparov, on behalf of Chess Cafe, welcome and thank you for agreeing to do this interview.
Thanks for organizing it.
Well, it is a most interesting book, and to my knowledge, I could be wrong, maybe you have additional information. I'm not aware of a player of your stature doing a book on the world champions from a historical perspective. Is this a unique book?
I think it is. Probably there were some sort of researches of that type made in 19th century, but I'm not aware of anything similar being conducted in the 20th century. Yeah, first of all, it's colossal work, because if you want to get involved, you have to do it right. You have to do it right. You have to go around all these games, check them again and again, and now with computers it's easier, but at the same time it's a little bit more dangerous because every club player can check you and find mistakes. So it's the quality of analytical work has to be upgraded dramatically. And also, thinking about such a book, you have to come up with something new. What is the point of just writing the biography of Stanis? Many people did it before me, and they had more material, and they could do much better. So at one point I thought about, you know, this really big picture, and it started by an accident. So the book, I never thought about the book, because, you know, when you're an active chess player, you're on the top of the world. So do you care about writing books? I had good book about my two matches with Karpov. That was a very good book. I was very proud of that. Before that, I had a book, Test by Time. So, and that's also, all these books, they were under strong influence of Botvinnik, who always, you know, told me and convinced me that unless, Garry, you are working hard, unless you are analyzing your games, you will not be making progress. So keeping in shape means analyzing your games, looking for some new ideas, fresh ideas. So that's how Botvinnik stayed for so long, and that's what he taught me as my mentor. In 95, Fred Friedel came up with with an offer to write columns for Welt am Sonntag, weekly column. And it didn't sound exciting for me. But eventually I said no. It was first reaction. But then I had another thought. And I said, maybe what could I do if I start looking at the world champions? So I had sort of the idea that maybe I could try to project every world champion to his own time and just to show the contribution of this person into the game of chess, and also the connection between the game of chess and the rest of the world, the science, the culture, the all spirits and flavors of the time. So that was a very, very vague idea. Very vague idea. But, you know, it worked. You know, we had quite a good working mechanism with Friedel. You know, I wrote it in first columns in English, and we had 64 columns. And I finished writing it just before my match with Deep Blue, second match. I remember finishing tall on my way, in the plane, flying from Moscow to New York. But it was a sort of a raw material. It never had anything close to a book, so it didn't look like a book. It was just a combination of my thoughts that I was able to put together with Fred's help. But at one point, I had to come back to that, because in Russia, one of our Russian papers, Sport Express, wanted me to write it in Russian.
And it has appeared in Russian.
No, it was originally, first 64 columns were written in English.
I was talking about the
book. Yeah, and I said, okay, you translate it. But then what happens, you translate from English to Russian, and that's a different text. Mm-hmm. So I had to work hard on it. So then I actually came up with the idea of inviting someone. I met with Dmitry Plisetsky, whom I knew for a long time, and we we teamed up just for this specific work. It's yet not a book. Then they asked us to have also Bedrosian and Spassky, so we added. And then at one point, Dmitry told me, why not just to come up with a book? I said, you know, book, but it's not enough for the book. And what's happened that we began to work on the book, and then it was more and more to come. Because if you want to have a book, you have to do it right. So just having it right, it's not just, you know, a small story about a world champion playing some great games and some of his greatest competitors. You have then to try to find out the entire development of the game through the games of the best players. And then I got the idea. That was about, that was probably in year 2000, when I already had the idea of the book. The idea is sort of, I call it the development of the game of chess. So the entire development of the game of chess throughout the games of the greatest players for the last 200 years. So that's, I realized it would be a gigantic task. And then, you know, we made sort of the framework, and I was puzzled because I saw the amount of work. But then Dmitry and my mother, in fact my mother told me, look Gary, you know, you did a lot of good things in the world of chess, you played great game, but you have to leave sort of a legacy behind you. No one will be able to do it. And also now we are sort of facing, I wouldn't say the end of history, but definitely the classical chess as the game is no longer carrying the same importance. So to some extent, these books sort of the milestone that ends a great period of the history of chess.
The chronicle of...
Chronicle of the game. Because the game is different now. With rapid chess, with world championship matches decided by blitz games, with internet, we have to admit it's another game. It's sort of a new game.
It has evolved.
I wouldn't say it's bad or good. I think it's good. It's bad from the classical perspective, but it's good because game is able to evolve. So that's, it means it's catching up with time. So it's ancient, but it also remains highly advanced technologically. So it fits internet and technological era. So we could be proud about it. But at the end of the day, someone has to come up with a story. Not the final story, but I wanted to lay down a foundation for more people to contribute. Because we have a great history. It's what we can document is probably 200 years. But it's 200 years not only of great history of chess, but great people that play the game of chess. And analyzing these games, I realized that each of them was a product of its time. And it everybody fit the dominant agenda of its time. And that's why analyzing the games and presenting it in the right light, colors, I could show the importance of the game of chess for the mankind. So, as you can see, you know, every step we made, you know, enlarged the amount of work.
Well, that's good. No, don't be sorry at all. You've explained how the book gradually came to be, and you've mentioned Dmitry Pisetsky.
Yes.
This is one of three volumes. This is an enormous amount of material.
I could reveal a secret. It could be more than three.
Oh, okay.
It could be. It's not yet decided because while working on that, originally we didn't have any games that were important for the career of the player, each player. So we paid attention to the games that are fundamental for the development of chess, not the games that were deciding the world championship matches. And eventually Dmitry convinced me that that's not right. We have to cover it up because you can't give the full picture to grasp the whole contribution of the player without showing his most important vital games in the world championship matches. So that's why we actually added it in. And now, looking at the picture, now I'm finishing volume 3 now,
right.
Carpo.
Okay.
We decided that the whole story will not be full without whole coverage of Kasparov-Karpov matches. It was not covered. The first one, I don't count some, you know, lousy books. So as I wrote about two matches, but still it had to be upgraded because now with computer I could do more work, and also matches 4 and 5. These matches sort of created, it was sort of the birth sport of the new generation of the players. most of these young players, they came up, they entered the world of chess by studying these games. These matches contributed to the development of this theory, and also, I think, created sort of a new concept. That's why I recognize that without having these matches, it will not be a full story. Having these matches, the Volume 3 becomes
a thousand.
So that's why most likely, you know, it will be moved to Volume 4.
Fourth volume.
And the fifth one will be my own games. So that's so just to have a complete story. So just and it's difficult challenge. It's hard, but you know, if you do it, you have to do it right. So you have to make it complete. Otherwise, you know, people will feel that is not enough.
Let me ask you a few questions about the development of this book. Plisetsky helped. Did you have anybody else doing research, or just you and Plisetsky?
Two of us.
Because that's an enormous amount of work. Right?
Two of us. So, and I could, you know, it's to reveal how we worked always. You know, we took a champion, so I analyzed the games. So I look at the games, the list of the games.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed the concept. So what was the contribution of this player? In fact, the first eight were already covered in Chessbase, so I already had the concept there. And I picked up some games, and I analyzed them with a computer, so I had it. So, and then I had my tape recorder, and we were recording my thoughts about the game. Then he took it back, he was writing it, he was transcribing it, you know, from the tapes. He came up with the material. And he also looked with his computer, so just to find whether there are mistakes. Then I worked again on this text. I made all my comments, I made analysis, sent it back to him. He worked on that, he came back with the original text, and then I made final remarks. So that it works this way. So we proceed through the games of each champion, and we're trying to make picture complete. The problem is that with each champion, the number grows. It's quite phenomenal that, you know, the best demonstration that chess is growing and developing is the fact that by trying to cover the contribution of each player, I had to struggle with the fact that each champion, the chapter, just grows. Games are getting more complicated, there are more lines there, and also there are more games that I have to pick up to have the complete picture.
Well, isn't that partially because each champion has the benefit of the previous?
Probably. That's why, you know, you see a very nice sort of stair. It's a staircase, you know, and Fischer is huge. The size of Fischer is equal to the size of Botvinnik, which has Bronstein and Karas inside. But Karpov is bigger than Fischer. Probably much bigger than Fischer.
Bigger
in terms of the size. Size of the, because I'm interested in the contribution of the player. I have to see how this person is changing the world of chess throughout his chess career. And I have number of games that are vital for me to present this case. So Fischer, you know, was huge in terms of number of games I had to pick up. For instance, Spassky, I think I had about 25, average is 25 games and segments. Fischer, it's 45. Karpov, I think I'm dealing with number like 70. And it's even without fully covering my matches with him. And it, one fact is Karpov's career is long. But it's quite amazing that it's not only a long career, because for instance, Spassky's contribution to chess ends, in my view, in 1974. He lost to Karpov, and that's, he played some great games, but he didn't make the same contribution as before. Karpov is quite unique. His contribution lasts from 1971 to 1996. Analyzing, you know, his games, you could see that the man was at the edge. So that's what I have to find out. So and it's quite amazing to see how they are enriching the game of chess. Each, and you're right, you know, the successor benefits from his predecessors, and the game is getting richer.
Well, you have the principles that are pointed out by Steinitz,
right.
And then you have Lasker benefiting from that, etc.
Absolutely.
You say it in your introduction, and I'm quoting here, "For quite some time I have been waiting to write a book on the new and modern history of chess, and moreover, deviating from the traditional approach to demonstrate the continuous progress of the game through the play of the world champions." Now, I call that, when I was going through this book, it struck me how you are viewing the champions from Steinitz through yourself and Kramnik as really different parts of one whole. I call it, I called it an integrated continuum. In other words, and I haven't heard this idea that you were putting forth in this game suggested by anyone else. We all know, you know, Steinitz had these principles, everybody benefited from them, Lasker added the psychological aspect in a great way, but in fact, they're all connected. And you say, yes, they're all part of the same whole, and I thought that was a very interesting idea.
Yeah, I also, Apollo Chambers have the greatest challenges, because the theories were born by the champions fighting the best opponents. Like, you know, Steinitz's theory would not be best proven without Chigorin. So Lasker needed Dr. Tarasch. So this is the fight of great personalities.
There are people who suggest that you needed Karpov in that.
No, absolutely. So it's you always have the different styles clashed and produced as a result. So new horizons in the game of chess, and it's amazing that you could. Actually, and in later volumes I will do it, I will show it, that you can quite easily analyze the games of Fischer, tracing certain elements back to other champions. So that's why I always say that, you know, when you look at Kramnik, you can actually see certain elements, you know, from Lasker or Botvinnik or Capablanca. So when you look at my style, you can see that's a lot of from Alokhin, Tal. So it's all it's like, you know, at new level you have the world champion who is inheriting certain elements from his predecessors, and that's why there are many lines that you can actually trace. Starting, let's from Anderson, Chigorin, it goes all up, you know, Alokhin, Bronstein, Tal, Kasparov, Shirov now, for instance. So you can, it's integrated history, and that makes it, I think, makes us proud.
I think you have a clear, every once in a while you get a very, very clear example. What came to my mind was Fischer's play in the 63 championship, where he played the knight h3, Steinitz's move, against the two knights. He played the king's gambit, you know, that was a very clear link. It wasn't probably as subtle as you're talking about.
No, but link, you know, I also played Evan Gambit once, you know. I think it's important, but it's not only in the openings, you know. I think it's about the way we are presenting this idea. So I think it's about look and presentation. In our games, you can see the similarities between some champions of the past and the leading players today. So chess, it's when you look at games of each of top players that fought in the world championship matches, you will be able to go backward and actually to see the roots. So they all come from, you know, certain roots. Strange mixtures, you know. We inherit different parts from different champions because we all personalities, but it's quite entertaining to analyze it, actually to find similarities. Something, oh, I saw it somewhere. Okay, look at this Kramnik game. I think it's something from Lasker. So that's quite amazing. And I'm, you know, I take as an open challenge for everybody. Just do more. We need more, because that's, you know, that's our history. So it's just a foundation. There could be more stories, more anecdotes, more human facts that I could. Volume 1 is most difficult for me. I never met these people. Volume 2 and 3, I played with most of them, and I met, except Uwe, I met everybody. So that's why, you know, it will be more of human interaction. But I urge people to come up with new ideas, because I want to see, you know, more stories added, and to create the history that will show that chess was, is, and will be a very valuable item in the human society.
One of the things that you do that I found extremely interesting, you don't do it often, but every once in a while you come to a position, and I believe it, you came to a position that Lasker played a move, and then you immediately say, had Alekhine had this position, he would have played something else, and it goes along with what you were saying. How did you come up with something? First of all, it's obviously speculation. We don't know what Alekhine would have played, but it's fascinating to have you say, well, here's someone of Alekhine's style in this position. he doesn't play what last year he would certainly play something else. It's a very interesting concept.
But it's again, I agree, it's highly speculative. But that's why this book is written, you know, for us to see, you know, how the great players made their minds and what was the decision making process and how it differed. So and it's you could view the book as the not only the in a historical context, but also as sort of the manual. So we just, you know, it all my ideas. It's not a final destination. People can vary, but as I said, it's an open challenge. So I think Alokin would do this, and Kalapalanga would do that, because I analyze their games, and I think I could be positive in making an educated guess, because I sense that their decision-making process. It's speculation, yes, but
it's extremely interesting.
But you have to make it entertaining. And also, I always wanted to give people food for thought. Now with everybody's equipped with computers, and already Volume 1, you know, was published in Russian, and we already received number of comments about the mistakes we made there. And for instance, in Volume 2, we already wrote. In Volume 2, we have sort of a diary. Volume 2 will be added 2 or 3 pages. It's our comments on the comments we received from the Russian edition. So for instance, I think the cleanest edition will be Spanish edition, because they're behind. Spanish and Italian. They will have already...
Russian, English.
But I'm sure there will be more comments after publication. And we welcome them. Every volume will have few more pages saying, okay, we found mistakes, other people found mistakes, and people had their provocative thoughts, great. So that's why the book is there.
I was struck by the, really, the great respect that you show these champions. When you think of it, here you are, probably the best ever, and you're treating these people with tremendous respect. You also treat the players who almost made it. In particular, you had some great things to say about Rubinstein. And let me give you one quote, and maybe you can elaborate a little bit. On page 204, you say, "Careful analysis shows that modern chess, proceeding from the Botvinnik era, is very strongly influenced by the games of Rubinstein, who was essentially one of the fathers of modern chess history." Could you elaborate on that?
As you could see, I believe that the world champions, they were sort of cream de la cream of world of chess, and without them, we wouldn't be here. So it's treating them with great respect. It's as treating your own ancestors. So, you know, Garry Kasparov owes everything he knows to these people. And game of chess that we all love and we promote wouldn't be here without their games. And they made tremendous contribution. And I always feel that this contribution was heavily underestimated. But moreover, the contribution of players that never made it was even more underestimated, because world champions deserve the greatest credit. And it's right, because they were unique. Rubinstein was the greatest mind, one of the greatest minds, but he never made it. We can blame the World War One that, you know, he was not, you know, in the right spot. Kalapalanga had time to enjoy vacations while everybody was suffering. Yeah, there are many elements, but still, you know, it's some big tournaments like in St. Petersburg 1914. He missed it. So there was something, you know, a little bit like Rubinstein, Kerwis, Bronstein, they lacked just one bit. But because they lacked this little bit, and it's more of psychology and fighting spirit, and they were superseded by Lasker, Kalapalanka, or Botvinnik, it doesn't mean that Rubinstein, Kerwis, and Bronstein, they didn't deserve the same credit in promoting the game of chess. So that's why I feel it's vitally important to analyze the contribution of these players. And I was surprised by myself, because I wanted to be absolutely impartial. When I write about the players, the stories, and you will see in Volume 2 and Volume 3, I'm not giving my own personal opinion, neither on Botvinnik or Karpov. There are facts. I don't want to deal with the facts outside of the game of chess. The facts, what's happened with Botvinnik or Kerwis or Karpov, they will be there, but it's not for me to decide. My task is to analyze their contribution. And I'm trying to be very, very impartial. So I see this match played a big role. This one didn't play a big role. And I disregard some big games, some that traditionally considered to be very important or big matches. And I say, okay, look, this match, this player played quite poorly, but here is his contribution. And I've been analyzing Rubinstein games, and I looked at the, it's not only his games, but you have to look at his games in his time. So I analyzed quite solely the games of Lasker, Taras, all the games played in the beginning of the 20th century, first 15 years, before World War I. And it was crystal clear to me that Rubinstein's contribution was enormous. And then I could immediately trace, Botvinnik as his successor. Botvinnik never liked to talk about it. But I saw, you know, Botvinnik actually inheriting a lot from opening approach, you know, the technique. So it's, Rubinstein was there. He had a lot of elements that he was not able, because of probably some psychological weaknesses, to put in the most powerful display. But it happened. And I even learned, you know, later, Plisetsky found that in early 60s, before playing Botvinnik, Pedrosian started Rubinstein games. Mm-hmm. So it's again entertaining. Sometimes, you know, it could be questionable, but if other players, other experts will display different opinions, that's good for the game of chess.
Well, I thought your treatment of Rubinstein was so interesting because, for the most part, he's not regarded by most players as being as important as you make him. And I think he's ignored unfairly.
Absolutely. But that happened with many players who just missed it by an inch.
Do you think if he had, now this is a guess on your part, of course, but based on what you have done, do you think if he played Lasker, say, between 1908 and 1912, he defeats Lasker or not?
Do you think Lasker would have
beaten? Do you think Lasker wins?
Because he was missing, you know, it's this very important element of psychology. I think he didn't stand a chance against Lasker before World War II. I'm unhappy about the failure to have such a match, because this kind of match could make a tremendous contribution to the game of chess. And if this match would have been played, you could see the real contribution of Rubinstein, and he would not be disregarded as much as he was before, without being able to play the match.
That is the end of part one of the interview with Garry Kasparov. This interview with Garry Kasparov is copyright 2003 Cyber Cafes LLC, all rights reserved. It may not be reproduced in whole or in part without express written permission from Cyber Cafes LLC.